Good to see you again, Mark.
Good to see you. Hi, Johnny.
Beautiful. So, guys, this is our very first of the Ascend Enable IQ masterclasses, where we speak to leaders in their field to try and hack our way to greater performance. So think about whether you're new in the industry or new in the role, you're not getting the performance that you want, or you're a high performer and you want to see how you can do even better. We're going to pick the brain of Mark Costa at the moment. I'm going to ask him some questions and talk about some things about what he would do differently if he could start all over again. And that should give you some insights of what to do. So we might start with Mark. Can you tell us a bit about who you are and your role?
All right. So I have the privilege of running the capital markets business for Australia and New Zealand for CBRE. When I got to Australia from I am a Kiwi, but I've been living here since 2004. And this is my 21st year with CB. So I've been with the company a long time, straight out of uni. So that's kind of who I am. And I love it. It's great. It's good business to be in.
Can you tell us, you've mentioned 21 years at CBRE. How did you get into real estate in the first place?
Yeah, so I had a friend whose dad had a valuation business in Christchurch, which is where I grew up. And this is going to sound really cheap and nasty, but they had a better cars and a bigger house than we did. And I thought my parents were teachers, and I thought, gee whiz, this real estate game might be a good gig to get into. So I did some work experience with him. And then as it turned out, as is important with most things you want to be kind of good at, I really loved that time. Like, I love the people that his partners in the business and the energy and all the rest of it. So I thought, this is what I'm going to do. Went to Lincoln University, which is an ag college just outside of Christchurch, where the property course was. Did that property course. I wouldn't say I was an excellent student, but got through that, and then I was lucky enough to probably best put eventually get a job at CBRE in Christchurch. So that's how I got into it and kind of left off from there.
I'm sure you're not the first real estate agent to get in there from that position of wanting to do better, wanting more. And certainly when I think about getting into sales 23 years ago, it was something similar. I wanted a better car, better house, and a better life. But I think what's always been clear since we've known each other is you love what you do. And I think it comes across. And I think for new and young brokers, agents, or anything in sales, I think it is really important not just to enjoy what you do, but to look like you enjoy what you do.
Oh, completely. I mean, this is it's a roller coaster ride, right? Got this opportunity, which changed my professional life with moving into sales. And yeah, like, you can kind of go from hero to zero in 5 seconds. So this whole idea of, well, this need to love it is really important, because to keep your energy level in a place that allows you to go out and sell and you know, have some passion about not just what you're selling, but the job you're doing and the result for your clients or the rest of it. It's so important. So it's the love is required for success, I think.
Especially when you consider that not every aspect of the job is completely lovable, I imagine. And I don't want to go into that too much, but it is kind of loving the process as much as the outcome, because early days, the results aren't always there. Was that the same case with you?
Yeah, it took me quite a while to click in the sales role. I think that I brought what I knew, right, which was valuation. So that the whole idea of pricing things up and justifying that with statistics and things. And I think that was kind of, it was really, really important for me, because it gave me a competitive edge. But what I didn't have that took a while to get was how important the relationships are and how much effort I needed to put into that versus proving that I was smart at how to justify a price. And then also those, not just those relationships as well with my clients, but also internally. But then also the sell, like learning how to get that message across in a simple but effective way to say, hey, this is why this thing is good for you. All those things that you inherently do after 15 or 20 years in the business, because you hear what the client's saying, and then you think about how to translate your pitch to what you're hearing. I was rubbish at it. I just wasn't hearing it. So I look back at this, and actually thinking about us having a conversation today, Johnny, I think I took me like 2.5, 3 years to really even start to get at a reasonable level where I was hearing what people were saying and selling, right? And putting real effort into those relationships, knowing that my clients really needed to know me to be able to trust me, type of thing. It was, I was a slow learner.
I think it's interesting because people often just think if you stick in the industry long enough, you'll be successful. And I always go by the theory that it's if you stay in the industry long enough and improve and do well, you'll be really successful. But it's not a time-based industry. There's a lot of people who've been in it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years who don't see the success. And there's some people who've been in it 3 to 5 who are outriding, outselling, outperforming. Do you see the same thing?
Yeah, I do. I think it's one of those, it's the old adage, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. What is it, Johnny? The like definition of sanity or something like that.
That's right.
it's the same thing in brokerage and sales and in agency. I think if you're not seeing that success, it's not because the world's against you or the market's against you. It's because you're probably not doing those key things every day with that discipline of being every day to ensure that success will give you the best opportunity to be successful. And I think I was really lucky that I had these people who kind of nurtured my career as I went on. People who influenced me like Mark Grana, which was right at the start of my career. He still was CVs. Matt Haddon, Martin O'Sullivan, who really taught me how to sell and how to create relationships and things. I had these mentors or teachers, if you will. But I was also a sucker for learning as well. And sort of, I'm not a big reader, but I'd listen to things or I'd hear people speak about selling techniques even if it wasn't in real estate, I just noticed those things and go, use that. That's really interesting and sort of relate it back to what I was doing in my day-to-day job. I think you've got to look for those opportunities and those people to help you, really advance at a much faster pace than you would otherwise do just by, like you were talking before, just going for the trip, you're not going to be that gun in 5 years just by going for the ride.
Yeah, and I think when we see it anyway, we see that a lot of people, and you mentioned having a technical background, and so that could have been your point of difference early on. But we often, when we're early in a career, we see it early in sales, we want to tell everyone what we know. And what I've always found really interesting in your industry is that how this often plays out is that you've got a young broker trying to tell the owner of an asset all about their asset. And that's their way of proving that we know sort of as much as you, or if not more than you. And as you've talked about, it's that ability to actually connect with them. And what can you tell them they don't know? What can you do that actually shows that the value in what it is that you do? And that's what we've always found really enjoyable working on live pitches for yourselves, because we take a bunch of really clever people with lots of experience. And how do we get that to craft a message with a greater outcome for the pure client hat on? Right. Don't tell them how many floors their building is and how many square meters it is. And
stuff they already know.
Yeah, that's right. You've got this building in the CBD and it's got this and it's got that. They're sort of thinking to themselves, yeah, I know I've owned it for 15 years. I know every square inch of it. But how do you actually get to that value add? And I think that's true, whether it's a corner shop in the suburbs, whether it's a building, whether you're selling an insurance policy or, whatever it is, it's that ability to really, number one, connect, and two is get to that so what factor.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. I think the client just wants to know, what can you deliver for me and how are you going to do it? Like, what makes you different? Like, not what do you know?
Yeah.
What does that mean for me? And that's that, it's a really interesting sort of change of perspective. And when that snaps, like, it's on for young and old. Like, that's that moment in time where you kind of get it and you go from being good to being exceptional elite.
And obviously there's, when you go to being exceptional elite, there's a financial reward, but there's that recognition piece as well, right? That you're seen in the industry. So being exceptional, then you get the rewards of getting more interest, more inquiry, you know, deals become easier. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think that's the outcome of being really good at your job, because you're not telling people you're good. You're doing your job at an elite level, and people go, I want that person to work for me to get that outstanding outcome. And you know, there is no doubt that there is a part of this world that I work in where promotion is important, right? You can't sell a secret. It's important to go out there and make sure that people understand, you know, the trades that you're doing, the transactions that you're doing, that they know that you've done them, but your team has done them, your company's done them. That's important. But, you know, you've that word of mouth that clients create for you in the marketplace and tell their friends down at the beach in Bondi on a Saturday, or, you know, wherever it might be, Port Melbourne on a Sunday in Melbourne, or South Australia, New Zealand, wherever, that word of mouth is 10x more powerful than you saying, you know, I did a great job.
Yeah.
And that's the absolute game. That's the outcome you want.
So you mentioned a number of influencers and people in your career. You then mentioned that desire to learn and get better. And I want to just explore and unpack, because I think this could be the big shift for a bunch of agents out there, brokers. But again, no matter what your industry, this idea of being, if you can communicate and have the confidence of a 10-year plus agent, successful one, in your second year, you'll get greater success. But often we try and just copy what they do rather than learn that craft, if that makes sense. And I'm just sort of curious on how you went about learning and what you saw as an impact and to how quickly you saw it.
So I remember I was sitting in a, like I said before, it took me a while to click, to kind of get it, right? And I remember we were sitting at 126 Phillip Street, which is where Investor was located. And we had a pretty large building that we were selling to them. We were sitting in this large sort of forecourt area underneath the building. We were sitting down in a cafe down there, and I was walking through why I thought investors should buy this property. And I'm going to admit that I planned out the pitch, but the pitch didn't go the way that I intended it to go. And what I ended up talking about was not so much about what the property was, but what it could do for their business, the fund, their ability to grow post even this transaction. And I remember sitting there at the end of having this conversation, and I was with a colleague of mine, and he said, that was the best pitch you've ever done. This is after the clients left. And I said, oh, really? Why? And he said, I was sitting there looking at the client, watching, and they were completely engaged. And at no point did you talk about what the rent was, how big it was, all that sort of stuff. You just talked about their business and what this property could do for them. And having this person just take the time to, you know, recognize that moment in my career, like, that was literally the moment.
Wow.
And I think, to me, that says, you kind of look at it in two ways for people learning. I look at it and say, I really owe that person.
Yep.
The few moments that they took after that meeting to point that out. But then to then leverage that sort of that learning, recognize it and move forward, and not just take it as a, oh, that was awesome, that's cool, and then not leverage it, would have been my big mistake too. But then I took that and then I started looking at other ways to get messages across as well. So there's sort of this, I think everyone needs to invest in themselves. Like, there's got to be, you can't just expect that, you know, twice a week someone's going to sit beside for 3 minutes and have that aha moment that changes your career, right? Like,
yeah,
you take it, you learn from it, but then take some moments to invest in yourself as well, you know, however you want to learn, whether it's YouTube, whether it's things that your company put on, but use them. And, you know, keep embedding those learning moments that, you know, can help you escalate, you know. I just want it to be really good.
I love that. And I love that you had someone who recognized it, made you aware, but you're clever enough to take that awareness and double down and use it. And I think, and we've obviously worked on pitches before, and we've worked with your organization on them, and we put that structure in place and we rehearse. And people think, you know, it almost makes you robotic, and it's the opposite. We do it so you don't have to think, you just focus on the client. And so
even in those moments, Johnny, when you guys come in and do those sessions for us, like, I always learn something.
Yeah.
Every time. But they're really good. Like, you never stop learning. I'm learning from, you know, Amanda Steele in our property management business. So I'm learning from a graduate who's just turned up, because, you know, you're always learning. It's interesting thing. It's great.
I really love that. And I think that the biggest shifts we've ever seen with individuals or organizations, it's those that get that multiple years learning in short spaces of time. And you can actually see a shift in months, you know, sometimes weeks, but months, sometimes 6 months, where they look like a different person. And it's a confidence shift. It's like that owner of their craft. And I, you know, we all know the 10,000 hours theory, but I remember when I started, it was having a good mentor that told me, whenever there's an opportunity to learn, take a heap of notes, debrief it, and try and apply it. And then he talked about the idea of role play, and he said, be the first to put your hand up. And it became this joke within the organization I worked at, but that no one else got the chance to role play. And I remember once in front of a conference, there was like 500 people, and they said, does anyone want to come up on stage and role play it? And I put my hand up and said, I'll give it a go. And I was 19, I think, at the time. Everyone was hiding, don't look at me. And they said, are you nervous? And I said, I do this every day. I shouldn't be nervous. And I got up and just delivered my pitch, my presentation. And then they gave me some feedback and things like this, round of applause. And I sat down, and it was that idea of, I recognized I put 5 years of learning into 1 or 2 years. And so by the end of that couple of years, I just had a level of confidence I wouldn't have had otherwise, because I'd gone through all those scenarios before. And I know I'm kind of leading you a little bit here, but I want to lead you to some younger people who are in sales or more junior in their career, because your industry does attract people who shift industries later in life as well. They might be on the buy side, they want to get to the sell side, and just assume that that would suddenly make them great at what they do. If you could start again for yourself, or put some thoughts to them, what would you do if you were them to kind of get up that curve faster?
I think you do need a good teacher, like someone who's going to put the time into you. I think you need to take every single opportunity that you get, big or small, around learning. I think that everyone needs an advocate for their career, and that helps them, you know, grow. It allows them to get to bounce ideas off. But the other thing is, and not above all else, but this is really important, you've got to do more than the next person. There's that really, really cool Kobe Bryant story where he's saying, like, I just wake up an hour before everyone else every day. And over X number of years, it means I've trained X number of hours longer. Therefore, no one can catch up to me. I think it's the sort of way it turns. Like, by the time I was at the NBA, I was so far ahead of anyone else. To be, like, truly, like, to maximize that opportunity, even of that natural talent, you still got to put the work in. Like, the training, the learning, the experiences, to be the person, you know, like I was joking about hiding, but, like, you know, be the person who takes the opportunity to do the role play. Like, all that stuff builds up over time. And that, doing that in that first 5 years, when you're, you know, not just a kid, but when you're just starting out, like, you could be starting out at 45.
Yep.
You know, whether it's where you're starting out at 45, or you're starting out at 25, or for that matter, 18, where people, like, staff starting there, like, first 5 years, work hard, yep, take the opportunities, source out those mentors. Like, that's the stuff. Be Kobe, right?
Yep. I love that. And there was a quote that I read when I was like 18 in sales, and it was really crude, but it worked for my 18-year-old brain. And it said, somewhere out there, there's somebody getting up earlier than you, getting out and getting at it. And when you meet them, they'll beat you. And it was just so crude and to the point, and it just made me think, well, I'm pretty competitive, so I've got to work hard. And I think the nuance about what you said, it's not just working harder and making more calls. And I spoke at a real estate conference a number of years ago, and I talked about this idea of just doing more work doesn't make you better. It's getting better at the work. And so it's that old practice doesn't make perfect, practice makes permanent. And so I was once told perfect practice makes perfect. And it's that idea of like learn your craft, get better at it, and then apply it, just apply it. Get out there and do it all the time. Like do observations, go to a meeting with you, go to a meeting with people who are great at it, and then write some stuff down and check in with them and say, I noticed this, why do you do it this way? How do you do it this way?
100%.
Did you do things like that yourself?
Probably not as much as I should have, like when I was younger. You know, if you're looking back and asking for reflections about what I could have done better and sort of even and sped up that first 2.5 years where I was not as good as I should have been. I think, yeah, absolutely important. Don't just rely on that feedback from that senior person who's walking back from the meeting. Like, take that 5 minutes walking back from 126 Phillips Street to our place at 363 George. Like, that's one-on-one time with someone senior. Ask some questions, like, pick their brains.
Yep.
So it's
so true. And I think, you know, I'm fortunate in my job because I've been in sales for, I think, 24 years now. But I work with thousands of salespeople. So I get to see the exceptional ones. I get to see the really good ones. I get to see all the way down to the below average and the okay ones. And there is natural aspects to it, right? If you're likable and you can have a communication with people and you've got a certain level of confidence or authenticity, that all helps. But there's very few that are just there based on that. You know, there's very few that are the basic, especially because our client base is so diverse now. It's not just a natural connection because we're dealing with so many different types of people. Like, it worked when your client base was exactly the same as you, but when the client base is different, you've got to make sure that you've got the ability to learn that craft. And I think that's that piece of really, you know, getting down to just learning every aspect of your craft. And I think in most industries, we think the craft is the technical aspect. And that's important, but it's how do we articulate? How do we communicate? You know, we say this to fund managers all the time. There's no point running a whole bunch of, you know, being great at what you do, but running no money. It's the ability to run money well and then communicate how you do it, why you do it, and the outcome you get. That's what makes you great at what you do. And I think it's similar to what you do.
Thinking back to your comments before about, you know, how everyone's so different now. Like, that's exponential from what it was even when I first started, because now we're not just dealing with, Australia, you know, and Hong Kong and Singapore. We're now dealing with Australia, Hong Kong, Singapore, Indonesia, London, America, and all those cultures are all different. And the way in which they pull deals together are all different. And the way in which they think about even the process of a transaction can be quite different. And so that whole idea of taking everything you learn and then understanding who's sitting across the table from you, you know, metaphorically at the moment, because we're all on Zoom. and adapting that, the way you communicate and the words you use and things like that, is just awesome to me. I just find that really, really interesting.
Look, like, I'm the same, and I live and breathe this. I'm passionate about it. But I think not only are we so diverse, we seem to have added so many more decision makers in every single decision in the world. And so where it used to be, no, that person's the main decision maker, they like to make everything. It's, yeah, that core group of 19 people are the core decision makers. And when you split that across regions and roles, you know, that a CFO versus a head of compliance versus a head of property or a head of sales and a CEO, their priorities are totally competing and have to come up with a decision. Like, it's really challenging.
Like, one of our biggest businesses is our metro business, right? So really important cohort of people. And, you know, even if they're selling, you know, I don't know, whoever it could be, like, it could be, you know, your father's shop front, right?
Yep.
You're going, well, but there's someone else to consider in that. It could be the accountant who also has an influence over that decision, or the banker, or, wife or brother, or like, there's these stakeholders involved in all of this.
Yep.
And, you know, that's all just an interesting layer to the transaction, right?
Well, look, it certainly is. And I think, you know, when I want to stress this, and I think we've probably stressed it enough to those that are in the industry, no matter where you're at, but anything in sales is to invest the time to learn every part of it. And obviously we promote Enable IQ, and this is only going to go to people who already have access to Enable IQ. But that is 24 years of watching what the best do well and what they do better and differently. And so we always talk about what the best do well is that idea of fundamentals. They get the fundamentals done really well, then they can expand and get onto that nuance level. And I think that your story about that you just connected and focused on them is what we often tell, I'll tell my team and I'll tell people before they go to a pitch is that before you start, don't forget, forget about the words, forget about the points. And I said, just focus on them and just be there for them. And it's that idea of just real connection, but you can only do that if you've got the confidence, you've got everything else done. And I think that one thing I want to get across, and then I'll ask your thoughts before I wrap up, because I know I've taken already a lot of your time up, is this idea that they reckon over 80% of all training's forgotten if it's not applied within 30 days, yeah. Right? And it's, so it's that idea of don't try and learn everything, learn one thing at a time and really apply it, like make it work and then move to the next thing, because your biggest click wasn't, I learned how to connect and I learned how to do this and I learned how to properly position and I learned this. It was one element that made a significant shift. And so I suppose it's a very, very open question. What are your thoughts on that idea of just picking one or two things and doubling and tripling down on it?
Yeah, I mean, I like that. I think if you're going to be elite at something, you have to be elite at something.
Yeah,
you can't just be kind of average at everything. So it's not like learning your craft, learning your career, learning your clients, learning buildings, whatever it might be. You can't just know a little bit about a lot of things. Like it's not like my whole business, all my great people, my great teams, they're all built around specialization because they really know something really, really well. And that's how we go to our clients. We're the best people who understand the stuff inside and out and understand your business inside and out. So it translates to the same thing when you're sort of developing your skill sets, your careers. I just think pick something, nail it, move on. I completely agree with you, Joey. But then I was listening to you before and when you were saying, oh, like confidence is really important. So when you're thinking about that and if you're speaking to someone who lacks that confidence, How do you go about speaking to them about like how do you fix that? Because this is a confidence game. Like,
yep.
I'm reversing the tables, Johnny.
I love it. Look, I think that you're trying to understand what the confidence and why there might be a lack of confidence. And so sometimes, you know, if it's public speaking or if it's a pitch or getting in front of a client, they'll say, I get really nervous when I do that. And when we get nervous, our fear is we're going to stuff it up. Our fear is we're going to look silly. Whereas often we don't actually look nervous. We feel nervous. And I had a pitch a few years ago and I was, my fourth daughter had just been born. I wasn't sleeping. We were called in at a very last minute against three global companies that were all going back to back. I thought there was going to be two people in the room. There was 15 who were making the decision. And we were told we didn't have 30 minutes anymore. We had 15 minutes. And I decided just to kind of rip the pitch apart and start with, this is the brief that we understand in lieu of a formal brief, because they didn't give us a formal brief. This is our understanding. Is this correct? And we knew the three global companies were very, very clear on their sales methodologies. And we said, yes, that's the brief. We said, great. We just want to introduce you to a study about sales methodologies and how they don't work. And so we just had a 15-minute conversation. Now, under the table, I'm open enough to say this, I was shaking, right, because I had no idea where it was going, all these people looking at me. And I walked down and my colleague said to me, what I love about you is you're just never nervous. You're never nervous whatsoever. And I thought to myself, this is ridiculous. And someone texted me straight after, you nailed it, unanimous, they've chosen you. And I remembered thinking to myself, it was a big mental shift for me, like was it 3 years ago now, that you might be nervous, but it's about how do you actually, the impression that you give. And I think it's in that sense of that's why we rehearse. That's why we practice. That's why we videotape beforehand. So you actually know. And there was a bit on a tangent. There was a comedian I saw speaking to a young comedian and he said, I love how you're not nervous. He goes, I'm burning up inside. And he said, we all do that. the secret is not looking like you like that. And so I think it's understanding that nerves isn't necessarily a bad thing. It can drive performance. But I think the second thing is it is practice, right? It is practice. And my team and I talk about this all the time, where they say, like, I need less preparation than they do, right? Because I've been doing this for 24 years, but on steroids, running 8 hours a day of the same things, which means that I don't need 8 hours to prep for a full day session, right? Because I've got all that experience. But what I do need is the same process every time to go through. You know, what's the purpose? What's the outcome I'm trying to achieve? What's the outcome? Who are the stakeholders? What are they trying to get out of it? How do I match what they're wanting versus best? You know, it's just a quick process to go through.
But that's the discipline to do it though, right?
Yeah.
Because you see a lot of people spend a lot of time on the market, a lot of time doing the same thing again, and they're really good, but then they stop doing that. Something to make sure that the time you spend with that client, you're nailing, like you're delivering and you're getting that outcome that you want to achieve going in there. Like discipline, I think, is just incredibly important to success.
And I think that people, when they've been doing it a bit longer, so I want this to really hit the people who are either already good performers or not getting the performance they want. It's, you know, I think we talked about it a few weeks ago. There's a book that says what got you here won't get you there.
Yeah.
And it's that idea, you need to keep adapting and you need to keep changing, and you might get away with it for a while. And I can run a whole bunch of good sessions without any prep, but I know it'll eventually catch up with me. Like, I can still be present and mindful without meditating for a few mornings, but I can't do it for a week or two. You know, it's that idea of how do you just keep those little disciplines all the time. And there's a masterclass we're going to do in a couple of weeks, who's a very, very good residential real estate agent. And his office is across the road from the coffee shop. I'd have coffee every morning with my youngest daughters. And there's a bit of a joke in our family that even the little ones pick up on, which is if he's not in the office by 7:30, we always say, I hope he's okay. Like, what's the or something like this. Because of that discipline, he starts his day the same way every day. And so I think it's not necessarily you have to go to his level of discipline, but what's yours to get that level of performance that you need to do? Yeah. What's yours that sort of is the broker or the salesperson you want to be 3 years from now? How do you make that happen today? You don't just become it, so to speak. There's got to be intention.
Agreed, 100%.
All right, final thought, Mark. Is there anything you want to leave to the audience there around, you know, one or two key takeouts that they should be taking from this?
I think going back on this conversation and purely on this conversation, I think invest in yourself, like learn, whether it's program learning or whether it's you know, having that experience and recognizing it like I did at 126 Phillip, you know, that moment in time, but then try and repeat those opportunities, learn from them. I think discipline is incredibly important. Like, you've got to be disciplined, like you are, right, with that preparation, like you before every meeting or whatever your discipline is, as you rightly say, like make sure you maximize that, or make sure you take time to understand what disciplines you need to be elite. And maybe most importantly, if you love it, why not be elite? Everyone wants to be Kobe. But without working at it, you're not going to be that. So sit down and go, how can I be elite? How can I jump from here to here? What do I need to do? And I think there's a lot of stuff that we've talked about today. In fact, I know there's a lot of stuff that we've talked about today that can be looked at, can be thought about, can be written down, can be said, okay, if I do 3 out of the 5 things, I'm going to be closer to that mark. And then you find another 3 out of 5 and be closer to that mark and just keep working on one after the other and become elite at that, as you rightly point out, that one thing, and then move on to 2 and 3 and so on and so forth. You know, just work at it. Invest in yourself.
I love it. Yeah, I love that. And I think if anyone hasn't taken this out of it, which is that if you love what you do, why not be elite at it? Like, I think that is such a great mindset to have. And I think it's you can't just love doing the job. You got to love the improvement, the getting better of it. And I find very few people, once they make that shift, dislike that investment in themselves. No one dislikes
it. I hope not. Better.
Yeah, no, I think so too.
And I want to go back to losing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. And that idea of Kobe, like he was clearly competitive, right? But he actually also just, he did something about it. He didn't just say, I'm competitive. He worked at it. And I'll finish with this. I had a coach a few years ago and my business had grown year on straight years. And I realized, like, and he said, so why are you getting a coach? And I said, I'm scared that I'm going to lose my edge with this, that it's coming quite easily now. And I realized that I'd stopped role playing. All I was doing was training others and role-playing others. And early on, I used to sit in their shoes and I'd say, have you thought about this? And so now I take all the opportunities with my clients. If they're trying to come up with a message, I'll stand up and say, what about this? And we deliver it together because we have that idea of mastery, that idea of just being great at something. So I take any opportunity to work with my clients to get a better outcome by role-playing with them. And I've seen a shift completely in the business again off the back of it because of that interest in saying, well, I need to keep getting better at what I do. And I think that for everyone out there that's sort of watching this, if you sort of follow Mark's lead, Kobe's lead, you know, back in the day, and I really think it's just put time into getting better, whether it be 5%, 10% of it on learning and maximizing the craft, that the shift will be quite monumental.
Yep, I agree, 100%.
All right. Well, Mark, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. We'll get this out to everyone very, very soon. And I'll see you out there very shortly.
Good to see you again.